to Allah, to the universe. You've sent out this message, and that message, once it goes out, it will always come back to you in a different form. Mm. Right? And this is always going to happen.
Does now, it have to necessarily be verbalized, or can the message...
No, that's the thing. It's a message either verbal or mental or spiritual or through your actions. Mm. You've done something and you've set something in motion now through that message that you've sent out. It's almost like there's energy always bursting out of you.
Definitely.
And even if you just think of something for a split second, you've now sent that message out there. Allah has heard it. He knows it. He knew it before you even sent it out. And it is going to return to you in a certain way. Okay, and this gets deeper, because this means even non-Muslims are praying, even kafirs are praying, even atheists are actually praying. The only difference, by the way, is that we verbalize our thing. We actually make it clear that this is what we're doing. We accept that we're doing it, whereas others don't. And even some Muslims fall for this trap where they don't even realize that they're actually praying for something. Any time, dear sister, dear brothers and sisters out there, any time where you desire something, it is as if you have sent out that message. Mm. And it's going to come back to you.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
Now, you can make good prayers and you can make evil prayers.
Like in the prayer of the supplication of the month of Rajab, where we say to Allah, Ya man yu'ti man sa'ala, ya man yu'ti man lam yas'alhu, wa man lam ya'arifhu tahannuna minhu rahma. Right?
Could you care to translate?
He who gives to those who ask from him, and he who gives to those who do not ask and do not even know him from his bounties and blessings.
Subhanallah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's like magnanimous on a whole different level. Not only did you not ask me, you don't even know me.
Mm-hmm.
Heck, you might even deny me, but I'm going to give it to you anyway. Number one, because I can. Number two, I'm your God. It's my job. And number three, I'm just that kind and wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We often forget Ar-Rahman, Ar-Rahim.
Exactly.
We repeat it so often, right? Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Ar-Rahman and Ar-Rahim are two different types of mercy. Ar-Rahman is for generally all of his creation, whether they're intelligent or unintelligent, whether they're humans or animals, whether they are kafirs or believers.
Other life forms.
This mercy is for everyone. Everybody is fed, everybody is clothed in, etc. But then there's Ar-Rahim, which is a special
exclusive,
type of mercy.
Exclusive, VIP.
Right.
So let's talk about instances where it feels like Allah has not accepted my prayers and He's not answering me. How do we cope with that? Because generally, it really feels like I'm just talking and He's giving me the silent treatment. I'm going through this struggle in my life. Sometimes it's not even a debt I need to pay off, or an illness of a loved one, or I'm in a certain state of distress and anguish. And I'm praying to Him to heal my heart, but it's not happening. And I feel like I'm just going to go do drugs. Because, you know, the effect is immediate, and I need an immediate change.
Yeah, humans have been created out of ajal, right? They are very
impatient.
They need things straight away. Our lifespan compared to other creatures is very, very short.
Creatures? Cats live 15 years.
No, I'm not talking about cats. I'm talking about angels and jinn.
Ah, right, of course.
Right, they live for thousands of years.
Silly me.
Millennia. They live for a long, long time. Some of them are like almost eternal, right? We live for like 80, 90 years.
On this planet.
Yeah, if you look at any creature which has a short lifespan, like an insect, for example, look at how agilious it is. You know, it runs around very, very frantically. It needs to get everything done right now. We're like that.
So it's not our fault,
it's,
you know?
It's partly not our fault. We are created like this.
It's what this material world entails. Yeah. It's part of its attributions.
Yeah. So that's one thing. We need to learn to be patient with ourselves.
Definitely. I think sometimes He does it on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
for us to become patient. There was this line from the movie Evan Almighty, the sequel to Bruce Almighty, but not that good.
No, it was awful, wasn't it?
It was. And so Evan's wife leaves him because she thought he was going crazy. She takes the kids, and then they are at a diner somewhere, and they're visited by Morgan Freeman playing God. And it's so cute. He is their server, and his name tag says Almighty. So God then tells Evan's wife, when you ask God for patience, does he give you patience or does he give you the opportunity to be patient?
Mm.
And that stuck with me. That line from that movie stuck with me fast forward 20 years.
I'm going to be honest with you, sister. I have...
So you haven't been honest with me up till now?
I'm selective with my honesty.
Okay,
with you.
Good.
I haven't prayed for patience. I have never prayed for patience. Have you prayed for have you been praying for patience?
All the time.
Wow. That's... I don't want to say that's your mistake, but I would like to say that you're very brave. I've never prayed for patience.
Why?
Because you're getting... That's what I mean. You've sent out a message that, oh, Allah...
You're getting yourself in trouble.
Increase my heart. How are you going to be patient without hardships? I don't understand.
Maybe I am already going through hardships.
What were you expecting to happen that... Patience means that those hardships continue, and mashallah, you've become more patient. Congratulations, this is what you wanted, right?
Yeah. What, number one?
If you had prayed for patience, and then, you know, the problems had just been...
But I know the problems are not going away.
Right. Okay. That pain is what you're trying to get rid of, right?
Yeah, the ability to cope with
it. Yeah, the ability to cope with it.
And the ability to... not complain about it. Because there's one thing about being patient, all right? This might not seem relevant to what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But it is very relevant. Because we feel like he hasn't answered us, and he will. We just need to be patient about it, right?
Mm.
So the thing about patience is, number one, it helps us cope with the hardship, with the situation that we're in. Number two, the maqam, the position of the sabiri, is a very lofty, high, sacred, valuable position that I aspire to reach. A person, there's a hadith from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam that patience during hardships is more valuable than gratitude during times of bliss. Right? So being patient when things aren't in your favor and they're not going the way you wanted them to go brings rewards and Allah's satisfactions and blessings, sister, and elevates your ranks in the hereafter.
Absolutely. I mean, that is really insightful. You're saying that, okay, so you want to get rid of the pain, really, and you want the ability to be able to cope with that difficult situation, right?
I just want to be on God's favorite list.
Okay, you want to be on His favorite list,
yeah.
Right? And you want to get there through patience.
Yeah, because it's easier.
It's not easier.
Yeah, it is.
It's not. Okay, here's what I do. I don't pray for patience ever. And inshallah, one day I hope I get to a place where I can pray for patience, because I know I'm going to need to eventually. But I'm terrified of praying for patience, because this is exactly what happens. The pain doesn't alleviate. It continues, because the trick to patience is having that pain and continuing with
it. Exactly. But I know the pain's not going anywhere. I keep telling you, I'm stuck with
you.
Yes,
you asked. I know, you can't get rid of me. I'm sorry. Right? But the Ahlul Bayt, look at them. They didn't get rid of that pain. That pain didn't go. It stayed with them. Imam Ali alayhi salam would go and weep at the well. He was alone, and he was bearing this burden up until... he actually left this life. I can't even say up until his deathbed, because even in his deathbed, he still had that responsibility on his shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
He still had this deep sorrow and pain in his heart.
And
it never left.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, that is one thing. But I don't pray for patience, because that's scary.
What kind of...
I pray for thankfulness. Thankfulness gets everything done even better than patience. You said... patience during calamities is more weighty than thankfulness during bliss.
Yeah.
Well, why can't we have thankfulness
during calamities? We can. You're patient, when you're a patient person, you develop that. I'm not saying I'm a patient person, at all.
No.
You know I'm not patient.
I don't want patience. I want thankfulness. Because look at the two attitudes, right? One is taking burdens, and he's being patient, right? I'm being patient. I've got this burden, but... The other one is going, I've got this burden, I'm thankful for this burden, and, you know, I'm happy I've got it.
Yeah, I think it comes down to people's personalities.
Yes, and that's another thing. Even prophets had different ways to get
exactly.
to Allah. And we're talking about the... We're not saying that one did something haram, one did something halal. No, we're talking about the deep spiritual connection, the personal character that Allah has imbued us with. Some people's path is the path of patience, and some people's path is the path of thankfulness. You know, it comes back to that hadith, and this is a hadith that we have mentioned so much on Youth Station. You youths better memorize this hadith and act upon it, inshallah. You know that there are three types of worshippers.
Yeah.
One who worships Allah because they're afraid of his punishment. This is the worship of slaves. One who worships Allah because they want his reward. This is the worship of merchants. What's the real worship? The worship of the thankful ones.
So I think this brings us to another hadith from Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Rasulullah had a habit when things went his way, he would say, Alhamdulillah ala hadhihi ni'mah. Praise be to Allah for this blessing. And when things didn't go his way, he would say, Alhamdulillah ala kulli hal. Praise be to Allah in all situations. So I think, you know, the takeaway from this discussion was that no matter what happens, be patient and be grateful.
Even
if it feels like he has an answer.
I'd also add, just be careful what you pray for.
I don't buy that, but never mind. Until another episode of the show, we leave you in the care and protection of the Almighty. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
I am what I am because you made. I have what I have. My love is strong because you are the one I call creator, my Alpha and Omega, my protector and my maker. Because of you, in weakness I am braver, my defender and my savior, my giver and my taker. Abiding in silence with patience and guidance, aware when I need you, the light when I seek you, justice, forgiveness, the strength in my weakness, and my love, my love strong.
This is IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. Thank you.
the limelight.
A new book, Poisoning the Pacific, examines the U.S. military's long role in the environmental degradation of East Asia and Pacific Islands, severely impacting the health of the region's people and U.S. personnel stationed there. Stay with us for an article in this regard written by John Range, author. This article is published under the heading, U.S. Military Exposed 600,000 to Toxins in Japan and Micronesia, and hit it. Here's more. A new book, Poisoning the Pacific, examines the U.S. military's long role in the environmental degradation of East Asia and Pacific Islands, severely impacting the health of the region's people and U.S. personnel stationed there. Author John Mitchell is a Tokyo-based journalist, and much of his book focuses on Japan, especially its southernmost prefecture of Okinawa. But he also covers contamination in places like Vietnam, Guam, and the Marshall Islands. The hazards range from nuclear fallout to the chemical weapons sarin and VX to PFAS, a class of potentially carcinogenic forever chemicals, so-called because once in the body or environment, they remain for a long time. The U.S. military and supporting government agencies have long prioritized public relations over mitigating harm. When an accidental spill exposed Okinawan-based workers to lead, cadmium, and hexavalent chromium in 1975, the U.S. consulate cabled the State Department, urging the U.S. to prepare the best possible political posture in the event of future pollution accidents. Handbooks issued on Marines from 2013 to 2015 barred them from informing Japanese officials of potentially and politically sensitive incidents. While detailing the environmental catastrophes the U.S. military inflicts on these places, Mitchell also lays out its efforts to cover them up. Among its many techniques, the crudest is outright lying. In 1965, Marines training in Okinawa let CS gas, a tear gas component, drift into a nearby middle school, causing students to suffer throat pain and difficulty breathing. The Marines, however, told teachers their pupils must have inhaled gun smoke. Then there is secrecy. In 1986, Congress's General Accounting Office produced a report on hazardous waste management problems at overseas bases. Such reports are normally made public, but the Defense Department insisted that this one be classified. In Japan, intergovernmental matters involving U.S. bases are handled by the U.S.-Japan Joint Committee, which acts, Michel writes, in total secrecy with zero public oversight. In 2000, the committee collaborated on a joint statement of environmental principles. The final product declared that the U.S. would remedy any U.S. military-caused contamination, posing a known imminent and substantial threat to human health. Here was one of the subtler deceptions, as all three conditions are vague and disputable. Imminent, for example, excludes toxins that accumulate in the body over time. One of the U.S. military's hurriest cover-up methods is smearing critics as anti-American or anti-military. In 1954, a U.S. nuclear test
irradiated a Japanese fishing boat. Crew members were sickened, and one died within months. Understandably, people were upset, but the U.S. ambassador to Japan called those who spoke out neutralists, pacifists, feminists, and professional anti-Americans. Ultimately, 32 million Japanese people signed a petition to ban thermonuclear weapons. There is a lot of professional anti-Americans. In 1990, the vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs spoke darkly of anti-military hidden agendas behind environmental policies. But the epithet anti-military might better apply to those who conceal the harm to U.S. personnel and deny them treatment. For example, in late 1970s, when the Pentagon sent service members to clean up Aniwak Atoll, severely contaminated from U.S. nuclear tests, it failed to provide them with hazmat suits or respirators, while assuring Congress otherwise. To keep up the pretense, when journalists visited the cleanup site, soldiers were given full-body safety equipment and posed for the cameras, the only time most of the men saw such gear during their time on the island, writes Mitchell. And in 2013, when barrels containing dioxin, a contaminant produced in the manufacture of military herbicides, were unearthed on land formerly part of Kadena Air Base in Okinawa, base leadership assured service members that aside from the skin disease, chloroquine, no other human health effects have been proven. The Environmental Protection Agency begs to differ. Dioxins are highly toxic and can cause cancer, reproductive and developmental problems, damage to the immune system, and can interfere with hormones. The barrels were found under a children's soccer field, adjacent to schools attended by children of U.S. personnel. Another weapon in the military's armory is to site its bases and testing in U.S. territories and other places with limited sovereignty, enabling it to ignore the rights of the people there. After the Second World War, the United Nations granted the U.S. trusteeship of Marshall Islands. Within months, the U.S. was using the territory as a nuclear weapons test site. Several years later, seeking locations for deploying those weapons, the U.S. chose Okinawa, which it ruled by fiat until 1972. Even now, U.S.-backed conservative governments in Tokyo routinely side with the Pentagon over their own citizens in Okinawa, effectively granting it vast sway over public health. As a reporter, Mitchell has personally encountered obfuscation, having been spied on and blocked from accessing public U.S. military websites. In 2016, an American university's Tokyo campus invited him to speak about Okinawa's environmental degradation. The State Department talked the school's U.S. headquarters into ordering the Tokyo branch to schedule a separate lecture for a U.S. embassy official. In the end, however, the embassy canceled its talk, claiming staff were too busy. Via a Freedom of Information Act request, Mitchell eventually learned the real reason for the cancellation. An embassy official had warned, "This sounds like a death trap." That is, they realized that if U.S. personnel with health concerns showed up, as they had to Mitchell's talk, it would be a PR disaster. The U.S. military's pattern of deceit extends beyond the period covered in the book. On April 10, 2020, a barbecue party held by U.S. Marines in a hangar on Futenma Air Base in Okinawa triggered the release of firefighting foam. No one present knew how to turn it off, and 38,000 gallons spilled outside the base. The foam contained one of the PFAS forever chemicals and contaminated such places as children's playground. Okinawa Prefecture requested soil samples to check for contaminants, and on May 1st, officials were finally allowed on base to receive some. A week earlier, though, the Marines had excavated the same area in order to remove all possible contaminants. Thus, they provided soil samples only after ensuring they would be useless. When prefectural officials requested samples from other areas, the Marines initially refused, relenting only on May 11th, over a month after the incident, when they provided additional samples. But as usual, there were conditions. While Okinawa wished to analyze four constituents, it was allowed to analyze only two. In sum, the U.S. military has exposed 600,000 people, including Americans, to toxins in Japan and Micronesia, according to Mitchell's very conservative estimate.
The world with reporters.
Social Rights Commissioner Nicola Schmidt has presented plans in the European Parliament to lift 15 million people living in the 27-nation EU out of poverty by 2030. Lawmakers, though, seem less than convinced.
Let us be honest, these are not new problems. We have to renew our approach and our methods if we are to succeed. The Commission must coordinate better with the Member States on social targets.
MEPs say poverty affects more than 100 million people in the EU. Apparently, the bloc's handling of the COVID-19 crisis is making matters worse due to the economic fallout.
President von der Leyen has accumulated disaster upon disaster. Millions of vaccines never showed up as promised. The EU is responsible and a high price tag has been paid by so many citizens.
All that is required to ensure social justice is political will, it has been suggested.
Despite the fact that homelessness has increased by 70% in the last 10 years, we collectively show that if we want to, we can provide people with a home.
During the debate, lawmakers said there are too many poor quality jobs in the EU, too many pay cuts, too many people sleeping on the streets, too many words, and not enough action. According to experts, moves by EU nations to privatise essential services such as healthcare are impacting the poorest.
There is a problem behind, and in my understanding it is very much ideological, because this idea of less state, less public investment, less public infrastructure, this is now paying off in a negative sense.
We are told, due to three key reasons, economic uncertainty remains extremely high in the 19-country eurozone.
Persistently high rate of coronavirus infection, the spread of virus mutations, and the associated extension and tightening of containment measures.
In May, EU leaders are due to hold a social summit in Portugal. They will go there knowing that previous targets to reduce social inequality in the EU were not met. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Protesters gathered in Islamabad to agitate against Western-funded NGOs. At the heart of their resentment are recently held rallies by the Western-funded NGOs on the eve of International Women's Day a few days ago. These protesters believe that the NGOs are systematically engaged in playing with established social norms and Islamic values by promoting Western brand of women rights in Pakistan. Many of the activists of the NGOs allegedly raised slogans of protecting lesbian and gay rights, something which is deeply offensive in a conservative Islamic society.
They're foreign-funded NGOs. They want to spread vulgarity in Pakistan. They want to spread the message of homosexuality in Pakistan, and in a country like Islamic Republic of Pakistan, we'll never ever allow this sort of vulgarity, inshallah. They want to tarnish the image of Pakistan, the ideology on the basis of which Pakistan got created, on the basis of which Pakistan came into being. They wanted to destroy that ideology, basically.
Islam has given full rights to women. No other religion has given the kind of rights which Islam has given to the women. But these NGOs are spreading obscenity and insulting Islam. The government must ban such NGOs.
There is a growing outrage in Pakistan since the NGOs started highlighting the sufferings of women from Western perspective. The number of incidents of violence against Pakistani women are far less than the Western countries funding NGOs in Pakistan to promote women rights.
The bigger part of the problem with the Western-funded NGOs is that they are focusing more on issues which might have hurt the values of a tiny liberal class in Pakistan. They hardly realize that Pakistan's social fabric is deeply conservative, and they feel offended over their attempts to secularize a society built on the norms of Islam. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
The pro-independence majority in Catalonia's newly elected parliament has picked radical separatist Laura Borràs for speaker, paving the way for the election of a new coalition government within 2 weeks. The former cultural minister, who is an ally of exiled ex-president Carles Puigdemont, set the tone for the upcoming legislature.
The legislature that starts today must be a watershed towards achieving independence of Catalonia, as expressed by more than half of the citizens of this region.
Borràs was stripped of her immunity as member of Spain's Congress last year after she was accused of misuse of public funds when she was in charge of the Institute of Catalan Letters.
She has always denied the charges, saying that she is being investigated because she is an outspoken separatist.
Putting up a challenge to Borràs's separatists are members of the far-right Vox, who made their way into Catalan politics for the first time in the 2021 vote. They have vowed to break the seemingly united separatists. However, a majority of lawmakers agreed to erect a cordon sanitaire around the populist party, which won 11 seats in the February election.
Vox will be barred from holding any position of power in the Bureau of Parliament, despite being eligible for one.
The far-right party leader in Catalonia vowed to fight back.
Vamos a ser su peor pesadilla.
We'll be the worst nightmare, and we'll fight them on all fronts, in parliaments, in courts, and in society. We'll fight to regain this Catalonia they've hijacked.
The next stage for Catalan lawmakers is the election of a president for the region. Former Vice President Pere Aragonès from the Republican Left Party of Catalonia is the likely candidate. Is a firm believer in the independence of Catalonia from Spain, but unlike the Speaker of Parliament, he advocates a more moderate approach with the central government in Madrid.
With a speaker under investigation and a spectacular breakthrough for the far right, Catalonia's parliament is off to a rocky start. For now, the road ahead is clear for the pro-independence majority to form a government and get down to business. Except this time, the men at the helm in the Generalitat will be holding out an olive branch in one hand and the Estelada flag in the other. Kasai Kadri, Barcelona.
Tensions heat up between the United States and China again over the same old issues, which have always been a source of animosities between the world's two top economies. It was widely believed that the new U.S. administration would make changes to its foreign policy, but it seems it's still following in the footsteps of its predecessor. Amid their diplomatic row, China has once again urged the United States to stop interfering in Hong Kong's affairs and not to go down the wrong path even further. The Chinese Foreign Ministry said Beijing will resolutely safeguard its sovereign security and development interests. that after the U.S. condemned China over planned reforms to Hong Kong's electoral system, claiming the move is aimed at pushing back democracy in the city. A top Chinese government official has, however, defended the decision, saying the reform coupled with last year's security law would help manage the chaos in the city. Apart from Hong Kong, the world's two economic powers are at odds over other issues, including Taiwan and the South China Sea. Despite repeated warnings, the U.S. Navy on Thursday announced the sailing of a warship through the Taiwan Strait, claiming it was a routine transit of the USS John Finn. It was the third such voyage through waters separating mainland China and Taiwan since President Joe Biden took office. Still, China has called on the U.S. to bring the bilateral relations back on the right track through objective and rational mechanisms. It also called on the U.S. to stop interfering in China's internal affairs. The call followed a series of rhetoric by U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who alleged that China is a challenge to the security and values of Washington and its allies. American and Chinese officials are scheduled to hold a cliffhanger meeting next week in Alaska, which will be the first diplomatic overture since Biden entered the White House. The outcome might improve or worsen the already tense relations between the two.
Leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has denounced the policies of the United States. In a speech marking the occasion of Eid al-Mab'ath, Ayatollah Khamenei slammed Washington for building military bases in the region under the pretext of fighting terrorism and called for the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq and Syria. Ayatollah Khamenei said Washington is the only country that has used nuclear weapons in action, but it claims to be against weapons of mass destruction. He noted that Washington still has the biggest nuclear arsenal in the world. Iran's leader also accused Washington of turning a blind eye as its Arab allies keep bombarding civilians in Yemen. He pointed out that Washington and even the United Nations, however, raised an outcry as soon as the people of Yemen started defending themselves against the Saudi-led aggressors. Elsewhere in his remarks, Ayatollah Khamenei said the United States is inverting the truth by claiming to support human rights while supporting those who violate them. Washington's double standards were also highlighted in remarks made by Iran's foreign minister. In a tweet, Mohammad Javad Zarif said the new U.S. administration is still sticking to a policy of maximum pressure against Iran, but claims to favor diplomacy. Zarif also denounced Washington's move to block the release of Iranian assets frozen in South Korea. He noted that Iran needs the fund to purchase food and medicine as the country is fighting to contain the spread of the new coronavirus. Iran's foreign minister made the comments after U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken announced Washington's opposition to unfreezing of the Iranian funds by South Korea. Blinken said the money will only be released when Iran returns to full compliance with the 2015 nuclear deal. Tehran, however, says it will only reverse its commitment cuts once Washington removes all its unilateral sanctions against the Islamic Republic. Iranian officials argue it was the U.S. that threw the agreement into crisis by its withdrawal and must therefore be the one who returns to it first. On the surface, it looks like the new administration in the White House has chosen to adopt less hawkish policies and engage more with the world. But in reality, little has changed since Joe Biden took the helm in January. Eyes are now on the Biden administration to see whether Washington will choose to give up its bullying or keep on the same beaten track.
Crude oil is considered one of the backbones of the Indian economy, and recent months have seen a sharp rise in the crude prices. Petrol prices are at an all-time high in the state of Mumbai, while diesel, the main driver of industrial activity, is being sold for more than 88 rupees a liter, raising transportation costs. The government of Prime Minister Narendra Modi for now has shifted the blame for high prices on previous governments and production cuts by some oil-exporting nations.
Experts say the rising crude prices will put pressure on the country's economy that's heavily dependent on imports and has just recovered from a deep recession following COVID-19 pandemic, which shattered the world economy.
While many experts believe that the government could cut taxes on petrol and diesel ahead of election in five key states, they, however, warn that the persistent higher prices could lead to inflation, which could threaten the path to recovery. They say both state and central government should act swiftly.
Prices are at historic high. Now, both the state governments and the central governments, they both will have to jointly come with a reduction. Now, state governments have their own issues, and they, despite the fact that all the opposition parties, they are trying to make out a case for reduction, but they are not acting.
While the revenues gained from taxes on retail fuel is key for government to boost spending in the economy that exited a rare recession, the central bank sees those levies along with elevated crude prices a benefit, but experts say any withdrawal of the easy monetary policies to combat price growth will lead to a spike in borrowing costs, in turn hurting consumption and business activity at a time when millions of Indians are still out of work due to pandemic. Experts say the turmoil in West Asia is also a factor driving oil prices, especially for India, which is import-driven economy. Meanwhile, a new report by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development predicts India will be among the large economies most severely hit by the COVID-19 pandemic and the lockdown restrictions to combat it. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
Spring is about to kick in, and nations that celebrate Nowruz are gearing up to ring in the Persian New Year. Gathering in Tehran is attended by representatives from all countries that mark the ancient tradition of Nowruz, including Iran, Afghanistan, and Tajikistan. They're here to exchange views on the history of the long-standing festivity and share their unique customs in celebrating the occasion.
The Nowruz festival in Tajikistan starts with a nationwide ceremony called Golgardani, where children who carry flowers go door to door and share the flowers with different families.
Every year during Nowruz, we take part in the Roses Festival, which is hosted by the city of Mazar-e Sharif, and people from all over the country gather there to celebrate.
During the Roses Festival in Afghanistan, we have a special performance called Molla Muhammad Jan, which is an exciting love story.
Nowruz means new day in Persian, and it marks the first day of spring in the Northern Hemisphere. To Iranians, it translates into a time to refresh the soul from all bad memories and make a fresh start in the year ahead.
In Iran, days ahead of Nowruz, all Iranians do the spring cleaning tradition. But what is more is the fact that not only do we dust up our houses, but we also purify our minds and our souls from any bad experiences. That's why Nowruz is regarded as a festival of peace, when nations come together and celebrate far from any political considerations.
Nowruz is now a recognized tradition in the world. In 2009, the United Nations proclaimed Nowruz an international event at the initiative of 12 countries that share this event, including Iran, Afghanistan, India, and Turkey. Nowruz has been celebrated by Iranians since three millennia ago. This year, mass celebrations will largely be limited in the wake of the coronavirus. But that's what Nowruz is all about. Throw away bad thoughts, and let's hope that in the Persian New Year, the virus will leave us alone. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
What once caught in the hundreds of children who remained in the border patrol hands when they were cruelly separated from their parents by the Donald Trump regime, now they are counted by the thousands. The number tripled in just a few weeks. According to the internal CBP report, there are more than 3,400 unaccompanied migrant children in cages.
It might be a big problem in the immediate future, like meaning in this couple of months ahead of us. But it's certainly not the main headache as it relates to immigration, because as we know, the problem is much more complex, and it's a problem that he inherited, not precisely from the Trump administration, come from years of a broken system that has not been fixed.
What is happening on the United States border was ignored for several days by President Biden's administration, even publicly refusing to accept that they are facing a humanitarian crisis. Still, according to witnesses, this is how they address the issue internally.
It is a humanitarian crisis because every time we deal with groups that migrate and you are not able to accommodate them, the numbers, the volume, it becomes a humanitarian crisis by definition of what a crisis is. However, if we hear carefully, the Biden administration is not labeling a crisis. The word crisis is coming from the conservative, the Republican Party, because the more you label it a crisis, it will give more ammunition from the right to say, you can't solve it.
Aside from being detention cages that is not designed for children, a report indicates that they are sleeping on benches as there are no beds. According to government data, 9,000 migrant children crossed the border in February, but now thousands more are waiting on the Mexican side. Reporting from Miami, Ronnie Carvello.
The 6th Conference of American Human Rights was held near the Turkish city of Istanbul to discuss the violations of human rights by the United States and the region. The participants stressed that preserving unity among Islamic world is a must in standing against the U.S. and its Western allies' policies, which have only brought death and war to the region.
In this conference, we have tried to discuss the human rights from the point of view of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, as well as the scholars of other countries, including Turkey.
The participants also expressed concerns over the crimes being committed by the U.S. and its Western allies in Syria, Iraq, and Afghanistan, saying the U.S. must be held accountable for the human rights violations.
The conference seeks to introduce the crimes committed by the United States to the international community and the young generation.
The speaker said Iran and Turkey must stand together to stop the U.S. interventions in the region.
The U.S. boasts about defending human rights, but it is the main violator of the rights in the world, particularly in our region. We are here today to show the real face of the U.S. as the main country behind genocides underway in the region.
Unity is the key to preserve Muslim nation against foreign interferences. This has been the main theme of the conference this year. The Iranian and Turkish scholars called for vigilance among regional states to stop the U.S. violence and put an end to its plots in the region. Rashan Saglam, SN Yurt.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of a speech delivered on February 17th, 2021 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, via video conference with the participation of people from Tabriz and East Azerbaijan, commemorating the anniversary of the Tabriz uprising of February 18, 1978.
Valuable lessons by our revolutionary thinkers are available to us. Thinkers such as Shahid Mutahhari, Shahid Beheshti, and others up until the present time. These thinkers have derived this infrastructure from the Holy Quran and Islamic documents. Of course, I firmly believe that the intellectual forces of the Islamic government should complete and continue this path. They should improve, promote, and update this ideology on a daily basis, as with the emergence of new issues, new responses are needed. They should provide these responses for those who desire it, for researchers and the youth. Well, these statements were about the ideological infrastructure. This is necessary, but in practice, we need certain things as well, because the mere existence of this infrastructure is not enough. What do we need in practice?
Your light and love, all I see, nothing more I'd ever want to need. My Lord, protect me from dishonor, grant me faith to be stronger.
Fearlessness, tirelessness, and the refusal to become hopeless and lazy and to unconsciously play the enemy's game and help him. These are needed in the area of action, and we need to be ready to make sacrifices in the right place. When we say in the right place, this means that in certain cases, we need to make sacrifices and risk our lives. They risk their lives and save the country from ignominy. Just like Shahid Soleimani, who was prepared to sacrifice his life. That was how he entered various arenas. The same is true of other dear martyrs such as your own Shahid Bakirin. When he departed for the other side of Tigris to participate in that very important, complicated, and difficult operation, he called his friends before his martyrdom, saying to them, "Come see what is happening here." I do not know what he saw there. I do not know what appeared in front of him from the spiritual world, urging him to invite his friends, as narrated by Shahid Kazami and others, to go and see what was happening there. Well, these are personalities who were prepared to lay down their lives.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah.
Aperture.
Welcome back. We met Javed Qarai, an enthusiastic young nature explorer, and followed him
as he discovers some of Iran's most unspoiled natural attractions in the southern province of Sistan and Baluchistan. We visited the exotic Martian mountains with their peculiar shapes and ventured deep into the intertwining and spiral cave of the region. And finally, we joined Javad as he gazed into the mesmerizing waters of the Sea of Oman above the rocky cliffs. Stay with us as we further explore the wonders of the region and meet the kind-hearted locals.
The area is so beautiful and unspoiled. It is home to large flocks of birds, such as the cormorant sitting on the sandy beaches offering a scenic spectacle. It is the perfect place for bird watchers to come and feast their eyes on these exotic animals. Bird watching is a branch of tourism, or to be exact, ecotourism. Bird watchers are steadily growing in number. Cormorants are aquatic birds. They are medium to large in size, with a body weight in the range of 0.35 to 5 kilograms and a wingspan of 45 to 100 centimeters. The majority of the species have dark feathers. They are excellent divers, and underwater, they propel themselves with their feet with help from their wings. Some cormorant species have been found to dive as deep as 45 meters. Cormorants nest in colonies around the shore, on trees, islets, or cliffs. They are coastal rather than oceanic birds, and some have colonized inland waters. Indeed, the original ancestor of cormorants seems to have been a freshwater bird. In my previous trips here, I saw large flocks of these beautiful birds here in this season. But this time, there aren't so many of them. One of the reasons behind the decline in their populations is because some of the locals hunt and eat them. Although cormorants are not supposed to be eaten because they are carnivorous. According to some religious scholars, flesh-eating birds are not to be eaten. The flesh of carnivorous birds may contain many diseases that can be passed on to humans if eaten. But the locals are not aware of that. Those who hunt the cormorants do not do so because there is nothing else to eat. So they have no reason to kill and consume so many of these poor birds and do irreparable damage to the wildlife and environment in the region. The environment and wildlife are manifestations of God's beauty. How can humans, who consider themselves the greatest of creations, allow themselves to harm the manifestations of God's beauty? Human survival on the planet Earth inevitably depends on the environment and on the wildlife. Therefore, our country's officials should educate the local populations and make sure that the environment in each and every part of the country is well taken care of. This has been a very beautiful day for me. Berries is one of the most beautiful places I have visited, and I have visited many over the years. A day later, I'm on my way to a beautiful village in the heart of nature, accompanied by my good friend, Sheer Muhammad Rahul. To get to Sham-e-Kohne, that's the name of the village, we have to walk a relatively long way surrounded by beautiful natural beauties. Near the village, we run into a shepherd named Sheer Muhammad, sitting under an old leafless tree by a pond. His is the simplest of lifestyles. The Baluch mainly speak the Baluchi language, a branch of northwestern Iranian languages. Experts say the Baluch language is very similar to that of the Medes, a people of Indo-Iranian origin who inhabited the western and northwestern portion of present-day Iran. And that is a testimony to the deep roots of the Baluch tribe in Iran. Today, the Baluch people live in the southwest of Iran, the south of Pakistan, Afghanistan, Oman, India, the UAE, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, and Zanzibar. Borders between countries haven't been able to separate members of this ancient Iranian tribe. Although they live in different countries, the Baluch have preserved their traditions. They pay each other visits, and intertribal marriages are common. The Shahnameh and several other old books have placed the dwelling place of the Baluch